This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back live from Real Time Sports in Elk Grove Village with more of the Spiegel and Home Show presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Here comes his 100th pitch of the day. Swung on and missed. He has not given up a hit through six innings. Will he pitch beyond this inning? We'll see.
That is a highlight. That's our guy, Pat Hughes. And you know that, Mark Grody.
Love Pat Hughes.
Pat Hughes doing a highlight of Paul Skeens, the pitcher from the Pittsburgh Pirates. Maybe you saw the news today, not the news about Dan Bernstein and the Score. That is news that we have discussed. If you're interested, you can hit the rewind button on the Odyssey app and listen to me and Mark Grody discuss it as best we can at 2 o'clock. So at the top of the 2 o'clock hour, we did that whole segment on that.
And there was a formal announcement made on the radio, too.
Prior to that, yes.
By Mitch Rosen, the boss of the Score. So that is for people who are interested. And that doesn't mean we're not going to continue to mention and talk about Dan Bernstein until 6 o'clock periodically.
It'll certainly come up, but we're not going to eulogize a living man. It is what it is. But if that's what you're looking for, I highly recommend that you hit rewind and then come back and join us live. So this Paul Skeens card, a baseball card, sold yesterday for $1.11 million. And that's a baseball card, one card. It is a one-of-one card that was in the Topps baseball card set in 2024. I believe it's the 2024 card. This is something that Topps started doing in 2023, where they took a small patch of the uniform that a player wore on his debut, and they attached it to the baseball card. Okay? Anthony Volpe, the young Yankee shortstop, had a card that sold for $150,000. Jackson Holliday of the Baltimore Orioles, his MLB debut patch autograph card sold for almost $200,000, $198,000, okay, in Thursday's auction. But the Paul Skeens, because of who Paul Skeens is, sold for $1.11 million. Anybody who doesn't know, Paul Skeens won the Rookie of the Year. He finished, he was a Cy Young finalist, I think top three. He started the All-Star game for the National League. He's like, if he stays healthy, he's a surefire Hall of Famer kind of thing. So $1.11 million for a baseball card. On the face of it, maybe this doesn't seem that outrageous. We've seen baseball cards sell for this before, right? But this is different, Groats. This is not like a Mickey Mantle card that somebody found in an attic. This is not, even a Ken Griffey card that has been changing hands, you know, for a couple of decades. This is not even a Mike Trout rookie for a guy who's halfway through his career or maybe at the end of his career. This is a card for a second-year dude. It's a card that a kid got 6 months ago. A kid found this at Christmas. That's different, right? And explain more, but that is a vast difference and a unique situation that we're in here.
Yes, and the patch autograph card, as you said, sold for $1.11 million. His payout, the boy's payout, $925,000 a year. So, yeah, it's his find, but this sparked some emotion from you, too, in terms of collections and what level we might be going to.
Because a ton of us collected baseball cards as a kid, And a lot of us got into it at different times. I got into it after the boom, like late 80s I got into it, and early 90s. And by the time I was into it, certain things would have value. Sometimes you'd get new ones and be like, oh, look at that. But then it kind of got diluted. There's just so many damn cards out there. I think Topps might have revitalized the playing card industry, the sports card industry here, and the hobby. Because the guy who found this is an 11-year-old kid. This 11-year-old kid got a box of baseball cards on Christmas Day. This was his lone present on Christmas Day last year, okay? And he's like, it's this big box of Topps cards, and he is an 11-year-old kid in California who has found the card and says, Dad, I think this is my card. And the dad does the research, like, yeah, you're right. This family has chosen to stay anonymous. But imagine your 11-year-old kid finding a card that is turned now into $1.11 million. This is not some old thing. This is a six-month cycle that has taken place. It is unbelievable to me.
It's crazy. And all of this, to be noted, Paul Skenes plays for Pittsburgh.
Yes.
The kid is from Los Angeles. So, like, that factors in as the story evolves.
Big time.
Because
he's not interested in anything that the Pittsburgh Pirates or Paul Skenes has to offer.
And they are offering. They offered him, what, season tickets for...
How many years, Shane?
30 years.
For the next 30 years.
Behind home plate.
Right, to get that damn card with the cloth on it.
Which, we did the math. If you were to resell every game at the peak of what that ticket should cost, you'd make about between $2.2 and $2.4 million.
That's
before service fees and stuff like that.
And that's based on the season ticket price now.
That's based on the individual game price right now.
Gotcha.
On the resale market.
So look, and obviously that price might go up.
Yeah, but it's work.
Imagine the maintenance you have to do
to
be in charge of that and sell those tickets every freaking year and every time they come out.
Yeah.
And the Pirates suck.
Horrible.
And they're probably just, as a texter says, they're just holding Skenes and keeping them warm until the Dodgers and the Yankees sign.
Neil Walker's not walking through that door, I'll tell you that right now. He's not.
And the Pirates are going to suck for a long time. And the kid lives in Los Angeles, your point, Gross.
What about Todd Walker? Is it possible that Todd Walker
could
walk in here? And so you know why? Because Todd Walker once walked with the bases loaded against the White Sox to win a game. I don't know why I remember that, but I did. All right, let me ask you this, Spiegel.
Yeah.
Mr. Baseball, if put in a similar predicament, would you take those season tickets for the Pittsburgh Pirates or keep the card? Because you're Mr. Baseball. You can go to PNC. It's sweet. It's beautiful.
At this point in my life, at my age theoretical maturity.
All right, you're dying.
And financial.
I understand.
Theoretical.
we're all dying. Act accordingly.
This 11-year-old kid has college and his first house paid for, right? I mean, with ease.
That's right.
I mean, he's got that. He's got that locked down. And the parents, he's got to hope his parents don't take all his money.
Just take the guaranteed money, right? Is that what it is? But never mind messing around with having to sell them. And
you know, Paul Skenes was on the Seth Meyers show because Seth Meyers, he offered like a VIP, like four VIP tickets to his show if the kid would let him look at it for 1 second is what Seth Meyers offered. Libby Dunn, Paul Skenes' girlfriend, offered tickets in the suite with her to watch the game.
Can I have that? Am I allowed to have that?
You can if you want, baby.
Okay, I'll find it.
He's got to thin out and start pitching.
A reminder that he's 11, right?
It's not like he's more attractive than you, let's be honest. He's not.
No, he's not. Yeah. He's not that good looking.
He's really not, nor am I.
Yeah, you are.
Mismatched couples.
I think that's our shrimp. Shane, I think that's our shrimp.
I think that is our shrimp walking away.
Yeah, she doesn't know.
Yeah, she's got no clue.
Our shrimp got up and walked away.
Oh, no.
She'll be back. She's looking right now. Where do these shrimp go?
That's the worst.
Shane, flag down the shrimp here at Real Time Sports.
I'll wait for the shrimp to come to us.
Hey, look at that. It's 35th Street Slick. It's right there. It's unbelievable. Look at that.
The Houston Oilers?
Yeah. So, yes, that is our shrimp. Thank you very much. Oh, look at that. The promo staff going to... Going to help us.
That's Grayson.
Hey.
Grayson, you're killing it, man.
Grayson, you preserved Matt Spiegel's Diet Pepsi, which
Yeah,
initially
really
gone to me. I was seriously
That's
thinking.
Wonderful.
Actually, I got told on because I was going to keep that Diet Pepsi until Grayson had to come over here and say that that's actually Spiegel's Diet Pepsi.
Wait, Spiegel, did Grayson just force carbs on you?
He did, but he doesn't know of my longtime disdain for carbs, especially forced ones, because forced carbs leave more of a mark than regular carbs.
What do I've heard that.
Forced carbs are fattier than regular carbs.
What is this shrimp? It looks unbelievable.
It's buffalo. We went buffalo.
God.
Did we really?
Yeah, we went buffalo.
I thought we went 6 mild, Woo! 6 hot.
Yeah, it's a 6 mile buffalo, hot buffalo.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah.
All right, well, yeah, we got buffalo
shrimp.
Anyway,
like I was saying, shrimp is the fruit of the sea.
It is. You're right, Bubba.
Look at that.
Yes, thank you, Tyler. So Paul Skeens was on the Seth Meyers show, and he said he liked that a kid got his card.
There were one of your cards, a baseball card. It was a one-of-one card, which means only one of them existed. And this is a picture of what it was. And everybody was buying boxes of cards trying to get it. And for months, nobody had it. And it was pulled last week by an 11-year-old kid. How excited were you to find out it was an 11-year-old kid?
Super.
Yeah.
Super excited.
What would have been the worst outcome for you?
Probably a 50-year-old collector,
yeah,
to be honest.
See, so I'm 51, so I would have been all right.
All right. That's not 50. You're fine.
Yeah, exactly.
love that from Paul Skeens. Genuine happiness for the 11-year-old kid.
That is the good part. That is the good part. Because, yeah, this whole thing would be a disaster if it was some of adult age, quite frankly.
But, I mean, like baseball cards as an industry have been dying, you know? And I don't know. My experience with a son who doesn't really love baseball, but he thinks cards are cool, like he's a Pokemon card collector of the highest order, is that he's been hanging around with some baseball cards, and he digs them, and he's like, he's got his favorite guys and stuff, but if he knew that he could legit find ones that are worth money like this, like that has fueled his Pokemon thing. He looks up, he goes to websites and looks up how much the Pokemon cards are. He tries to make sure that they're in great condition. He gets like the right sleeves and everything. Like he does everything that I used to do for baseball cards, but he does it for Pokemon because the value has indeed been lost. So anything that Topps can come up with like this to revitalize the industry is a masterstroke.
Yeah, it's a smart partner with baseball for sure. I was never organized enough of a human being to really collect anything. I couldn't sustain it. I did not have sustained success with anything that I tried to collect, including baseball cards. My brother, sounds like my younger brother was a lot like you, because he would get the full entire
set
for the year, which I always thought was kind of cheating.
It is cheating. Totally is, because it's not the fun of collecting.
Right, you go to the drugstore.
What did I get? Yes.
Exactly. So he kind of, but he did. For years, he had bought the, you know, in his early 8s and 9s and 10s, he had purchased the cards at the stores, and then now he gets the full sets. But, yeah, I was just never organized enough to do it. But that is cool.
Yeah.
That would get me interested.
Right, but
I am interested, actually.
Well, sure you are. Sure you are. Can you make, because it could have just been in a regular pack, but it's one of one.
One of one.
And that's how they've had to make it work. And had to find a way to make it work. You can't just have like, oh, I got the blank card or this guy's rookie card, because it just doesn't matter as much. So look for more stuff like this. Look for more gimmicks like this, more ways to try and do it. Maybe there'll be more of the debut uniform patches. I'm sure there will be. But there's got to be more ways to put one-of-one cards out there.
Hey, Spiegs, whatever it takes to keep your game, our game.
Yeah. Oh.
I've noticed that you've really, by the way, I was wondering if I could ask you about that, the our game thing. I know you've talked about it through the years. I used to hear Coomer say that pre and post.
Coom is where I got it.
Yeah, same.
But then Roger Clemens said it to me one day on Hit and Run. And so he includes me when he says that.
Rog?
When he says our game, it's like, oh man, Roger just gave me the our game.
Yeah.
When Coom says it to you when you're working with Coom.
Well, that's
the thing about, I'm sure you had that experience.
Oh, no, I did too.
Doing pre and post, and he's like, well, the thing about our game, Mark, and you know, and all of a sudden you're like, thank you so much for including me, because that's the subtext of the our game thing, is that like you're actually being included when you ain't nothing.
Well, that's what
I'm not a player, I'm not a coach, I ain't nothing.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on, okay?
Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask you, because I heard you like kind of casually say our game at one point, which says to me you are comfortable with being part of it. And I'm not saying you don't deserve it.
Did I say I was probably looking at Chris Tannehill as I said it, and it was at least partially tongue-in-cheek. Maybe a big part.
Oh, really?
I'll tell you right now, just honestly, when it comes out of my mouth, it's still aspirational.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Our game. Do you feel like you have to have played the game to call it our game? Because I was going to take it further.
It's a great
question. You've now done how many plays? Like over, like at least 20 now, right?
Yeah.
That you've been a part of, whether pregame or play-by-play, and you have the legit baseball card. Stoney loves you. You have had, like, if you had a resume, you get a letter of recommendation from him.
Uh-huh.
You'd get it, obviously, from everybody.
Hilarious.
Yeah, no, you would.
But, you know what? It's funny. I won that award from the Pitch and Hit Club, the Harry Carey Sportscaster Year Award.
You won that award.
When I won that award, Bruce Levine, our friend Bruce Levine.
Yeah.
Texted me and said, "You are a real baseball man."
Whoa!
And is that a lovely thing to text?
We're getting somewhere.
I'm just, you know,
yeah.
I try to be honest and real on this show, man. I'll be honest. That meant a lot. That was very nice.
Oh, I bet it did. And you know what? Bruce deserves to say
Bruce,
our game.
There's no question.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying.
He's an our game guy.
Bruce can say it, and he can own it. Bruce is absolutely an our game guy.
Right. You know who is like one of the guys that I originally thought of as an our game guy? And this was a while back. Is Len Casper, because not only because of the credentials doing play-by-play, but he became a baseball guy along with being a really, really good maybe even a great play-by-play guy.
Yeah.
He knows baseball to the bottom
of it. I think a play-by-play guy, play-by-play person who has done it for a while.
Yeah, you become our team.
It's a great question.
Our game guy.
I love this topic.
Yeah.
I'm launching season 3 of the podcast, the PBP, Voices of Baseball.
Oh, nice. Congrats.
Thank you very much. Next week or the week thereafter, we'll launch season 3. And I'll ask the broadcasters, do you feel like you can say our game with impunity?
Oh,
right? It's a great question.
What's the minimum? What's the level at which one can begin to talk about yourself as an our game guy?
I wonder what Dave Sims, who's the new Yankees voice and has been the Seattle Seahawks voice, but also was a football voice and a college basketball voice, I wonder if now he's the voice of the freaking Yankees.
Yeah.
He's got to be able to say our game with impunity.
I think maybe, Spiegel, if there's any controversy about you, you may need a little more travel time in terms of being an our game guy.
Yeah, like travel with a team.
Because there's a grind aspect to be able to call it our game.
You're so right.
Right? So I'm just saying, like, I'm just looking for spots.
That delegitimizes me. 100%. I have never.
No.
I've only ridden a team plane once.
Right.
And it wasn't when I was supposed to be there.
Exactly. Now, is that story out in the open?
Yeah, it's out there.
Okay.
So, but you've ridden the team plane for a few years.
I did, but I wouldn't even call, like, I've been away long enough that our game card was pulled. That's why I returned it to Bears.
By Tom Tunney.
That's right.
Get that card out of there. He's not a real broadcaster.
No,
how did he get that job?
My memory of the situation is that you and Zach Zaidman met at the midway point between Soldier Field and Wrigley Field, walking in opposite directions, and you handed your Our Game card to Zach.
I did.
And as he walked by you, he said, Bears. And that's...
Yes.
And that moment, you know?
That was one of those moments in life where when something happens that maybe doesn't seem ideal on the surface, where it may hurt a little bit, all of a sudden it's, well, it's going to work out for the better. You hear that, right?
Yeah.
I think it kind of, I can't speak for Zach necessarily, but I think it probably worked out for the slightly better for both of us.
Do you remember the Zacks, the short story by Dr. Seuss? It's in the Sneetches book about the Zacks who's walking one way and another Zacks who's walking the other way.
No, I don't know anything about that.
Oh, it's so good. And they come right up against each other and they're like, oh my God, I'm walking this way. And they're like, I'm walking that way. And they just stop and they stand there and they don't move. They don't budge.
Oh, it's a standoff.
And like they build a city around them. They build highways around them. They just refuse to move.
Wow.
So what is that? That was you and Zach.
That's right. Standoff.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to figure out what the lesson is out of that.
Don't hold your ground just for stubbornness.
Okay, I thought so. Okay.
Don't hold your ground.
Right.
You can step aside.
We met in the middle. You're right. Bears, Cubs, take care. Good luck.
thing. Good luck with my thing.
We need one more Zach to create the Zach.
I got you.
Stories.
Very good.
See how that whole room got tied together?
I'm sorry you had to explain all that to
me. No, I'm not.
But I think people enjoyed it.
Because some listeners learned about it as well. And some listeners are out there going, I see you, Speaks. I had the Sneetches and other stories.
That's the beauty of the score.
I see you. That is the beauty of the score. This is a beautiful place. I'm thrilled to be here. And we all miss our guy Dan Bernstein today and are thinking about our guy Dan Bernstein today. And we think about you, the listener, as well. It's a tough day. We are here together. Spiegs and Mark Grody here on The Score. We'll talk to Ryan McGuffey, our teammate, co-host of Inside the Clubhouse, next on Spiegel & Holmes. We're live at Real Time Sports in Elk Grove Village.
We're back live from Real Time Sports in Elk Grove Village. With more of the Spiegel & Holmes Show, presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
You know, right now, it's just about going out and competing every day, you know. I think kind of how that looks on a daily basis is going to be a result of who we have and how we are able to maximize our skill sets out there. But we just know we have to go out there and compete, and these guys are all on board, and it's been a good camp so far.
That is the unmistakable voice of Groats, you know. It's okay.
I need to hear more.
No.
No, I did.
It's
I
wasn't good for you.
I did not have it tuned in.
I don't. I'm not trying to embarrass you.
No, it's okay. If I heard it again,
I don't think you know.
Heard it. Period. I just wasn't.
No. I'm not trying to embarrass you.
Okay.
But I am using you to prove a point. I'd say 98% of our listeners do not know that is Will Venable, the new manager of the Chicago White Sox.
Wow.
Which speaks to the difficulty of his task in terms of publicly breaking through into the baseball conversation, right? It's a tough spot when a team that won as few games as they did last year is only going to win a handful more, if that. Let's talk about it. He's Mark Grody. I'm Matt Spiegel. It is 670 The Score. This is the Spiegel & Holmes Show. Lawrence Holmes is at Rick Camp's wedding. Man, that's just like, that's one of the most fun things I've been able to say in a while.
That's the headline of today, by the way. Lawrence Holmes
is
at Rick Camp's wedding today.
That is the biggest news involving any host at The Score.
And we've talked about it now. This is the third or fourth time we've talked about Lawrence being at Rick Camp's wedding.
If you want to hear more about us talking about Lawrence Holmes being at Rick Camp's wedding, you can go back to 2 o'clock on the rewind function of the Odyssey app. And you'll also hear us in that segment do about 20 minutes on the departure of Dan Bernstein.
There's also that. Big topic. Yeah.
But that's not why you called. Ryan McGuffey is our friend and teammate, colleague. He is the co-host of Inside the Clubhouse on Saturday mornings with Bruce Levine, and he joins us right now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. What's up, Guff? How are you? Hello, Guff.
He is overcome
with emotion.
Hello, do you have me?
Guff, we got you, buddy. How are you?
All right. I'm laughing my butt off over here like 6 minutes before you even got me onto the show. So you guys are doing a great job. By the way, Grody, Drew Dahlman, Joe Tooney, you could have said either one and everyone would have been, yeah, that's probably true too. Like, no one knows. It's fine. The voice.
The voice, right? That's a good point.
Don't just throw that around. I recognize the voice of Dio Dangbo and Jonah Jackson. Okay.
No, that's a good point.
That's a talent.
All right. So if you're making the point, Guff, that Will Venable's job is that he's so new into our mindset that we don't know the voice yet, that's fine. Will we know that Will Venable has had an impact on the Chicago White Sox by the way they play this year, and how might we know that he's had an impact?
Holy hell, I hope so. I mean, otherwise, what's the point? Like, you could have just kept running it back. I really, truly expect from everybody I've talked to, from what I've seen, and look, like, it's going to be bad. There's just going to be a lot of turnover, a lot of different names coming up and down from Chicago all year. But what one thing I do expect, and the receipts will be held on this, I know, I do expect the baseball to be cleaner and to look better, and cutoff man to be hit, and first to third to look better, and booted. But like, I'd rather. I'm so sick of seeing the 4-2 loss where you're just gritting your teeth for three innings because you're pissed about an error or a bobbled ball or a missed cutoff. Man, 4-2 and losing it the right way is a lot different. You guys both know that, covering baseball for a long time. And look, like, is Will Venable going to bring the White Sox to a 99 loss team? I don't expect that to happen. If he does, he should be manager of the year. But I do expect that baseball to look different. Look at the guy's resume. It's different than the guys before him. And the guys he's learned underneath, the Bruce Bochy's, he needed an extra. He said it. I needed one more year in Texas before I took a managerial job. To pull yourself out of the Cleveland Guardians and the New York Mets mix is surprising when you look up into where he landed with the White Sox, who were coming off of 41-121. But I think he believes in the bigger picture and what's being done behind the scenes. And people don't like to hear that, but I truly believe that that's what's different now.
I hope, Ryan, that you're right about that, because it, like, when Pedro Grifol came in, honestly, and I'm not pinning this on you, I'm pinning this on what I heard from everybody talking about the White Sox was saying about Pedro Grifol, is that he will bring back some accountability, and there will be, at the very least, as you were saying about Will Venable, they will get back to basics, and they will be a fundamentally sound team, and that's what Pedro Grifol is going to bring to the White Sox, and that obviously didn't come close to happening. So
God,
I'm not,
you're so right,
I'm
man.
I'm not ready yet to say, to buy it, quite frankly, from Will Venable.
And I think you are 100% accurate on that. Pedro Grifol came on the air immediately after his press conference with Chuck and I, live on television, and said, we're going to prepare to kick your ass every night. And it won, that soundbite was looped over again and again. It's probably been played on the score 150 times. And it fell straight on its face. Do you know why? Because everything he said in the press conference, and God knows we have seen, we could do a Mount Rushmore times three of guys who've come in here and won a press conference. Hopefully Ben Johnson didn't just become part of that Mount Rushmore. Hopefully it actually translates to on the field. But he won the press conference because of everything he said. We're going to change. We're going to hold people accountable. And then he let the inmates run the asylum. He walked in on opening day of Glendale, and instead of saying, here's my message, he looked around and was like, well, they got a lot of veterans here. They know what they've been doing. They've been doing it a long time. I think they know what they've done. They just won a division 2 years ago. And he put his hands up, and he stepped back, and he let them lead. And it fell apart quickly, and there was a disastrous clubhouse. Now, last year, I give him a lot of credit. It was for a team that was 41-121. They were not that type of a clubhouse. They liked each other even when they were losing. And I think I'm so sick of hearing about how much people like each other in a clubhouse. But when he went to Glendale with the acronyms, you guys, what? Like, talk about a guy that was desperate. Putting, play fast. Was that Matt Eberflus or not? Play fast on the tunnel on your way to PFPs. Play fast. And then fast had like five or six words, not four, because it's a four.
I don't remember Grifol's acronym.
Oh, yeah.
Play fast. Play fast. Yeah.
My God, Guff, it's such a great point about how Grifol failed and let the veterans lead, and that thing was toast. He had like a weird mix, and he chose the vets, and it was really bad. The thing is, this team, this year on the big league level, if you're going to focus on that, it's a bad mix again, you know? Because they're like seven position players in their 30s who are decent guys, solid dudes. They're here to, like, instill habits and culture, but they're unlikely to be here when you're decent. I'm talking about, you know, Mike Talkman's a good dude. Michael Taylor, right. Brandon Drury, Josh Rojas, Travis Jankowski might make this team, you know? Benintendi and Slater are hurt, but they're here. Joey Gallo's now gone. But, like, I mean, that's not what fans are going to be focused on if they're really smart fans who are willing to zoom out and look at what's being built and when this team will eventually be good. Who matters? Who matters on the opening day roster? Who really matters, and who should a fan focus on to see if they're any good and might develop into something that's genuinely useful?
Yeah, it's an awesome point. But there's no cookies or carrots for the fans this week. And that's what sucks. This team reminds me of the 2012 Cubs, that Theo's first year where you had, like, you knew David DeJesus. You're like, oh, he's been a pretty good player all of his career, and he's coming here for a team that's terrible but wasn't going to see the other side. That's kind of what they have. They have a bunch of those guys. The difference is Theo wasn't coming in. The excitement level to just have Theo alone because of what was being talked about at the end game, people could deal with 2012. Fans are now coming off a 41-121 historic season, and here's what you're offering on opening day. And I get it. Like, I understand not throwing out Colson Montgomery out there and not throwing out like one or two more guys making their major league debuts because you're trying to appease the fans if they're not ready. Like, if Colson Montgomery comes up and flops in April because you wanted to give the fans a cookie,
yeah,
that's bad. And the White Sox have done that in the past. And I don't think Chris Getz is going to get caught in that same trap. And he doesn't care about time. He doesn't care about what people – he doesn't care about pressure or the noise. He's going to do it his way. At least that's what he told me. He's going to do it his way. And if time runs out, time runs out. He's going to stay true to the plan. We'll see if that's the case 2-3 years from now. But to your point, the one big difference between that Cubs team and this White Sox team is I feel like the fans need something. They need low-hanging fruit to, like, hop on board with and be like, man, I can't wait to watch Colson Montgomery. I know Braden Montgomery, he's a bad example because he's never played a game of minor league baseball, but
yeah.
Braden Montgomery in right field. You know, Chase Meidroff might be that guy, I guess.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
He's probably that guy on opening day that you're like, let him start. If he can be the on-base guy that somehow gets a 370 OBP or higher his rookie year, he'll be the fun guy. The problem is we're going to have to wait until midsummer and in the back half of this season for all of those cookies and carrots to show up. But in terms of this week, it's going to be a lot of those journeyman guys you already mentioned.
So, good stuff from Ryan McGuffey, the co-host of Inside the Clubhouse. I agree that Chase Meidroff, he ought to be your opening day shortstop and leadoff hitter. That's a point of
yep.
aggression. Dude has proven himself at AAA in the Red Sox system. He's part of the Groshay trade. Let him go out there and see what you got. Sean Burke in your starting rotation is one of those guys, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe Jonathan Cannon, because he had a good year last year, but he's had a crappy spring. I suppose Andrew Vaughn.
Oh, man.
I mean, like, it's just – but I'll say this. Luis Robert Jr. on this roster is, frankly, just a distraction. Like, he doesn't fit. One of these things is not like the other, you know? And
yeah.
It's like the sooner they can rid themselves of that, the cleaner it will be. I know they're waiting, but I don't think the waiting is going to get rewarded with more value, frankly.
Hmm. Good point. I saw ESPN this morning release, like, they had a long form feature on, you know, can the worst team in baseball history be even worse? And,
yeah.
And it was actually a really good read, and Robert was a part of that. Here's what I'll say about Robert. Whether he stays on the field or not, I think every one of us would not be willing to put our money down that he is a healthy baseball player for the 80-plus games going into the All-Star break. I'm going to keep my money. I care too much about buying anything else than the idea of betting on a guy who's played 100 games twice. And mind you, one of those was exactly 100 games last year. However, I will say this. We've seen these guys, the Yoan Moncadas, the Eloy Jimenezes. If there's ever going to be motivation in these players, ever in the history of their lives, it would be last year or now. For Luis Robert, the spotlight is on right now. If he wants to be a nine-figure player ever in his life, and he's got the talent times three of any of those other guys I just mentioned, White Sox fans should actually be rooting hard for Luis Robert to be that guy that they were hoping to see in the last 4 years. That I really believe that. Maybe that's the biggest thing White Sox fans actually need to hang on to in the first 2 months. Watch, hope that this guy hits 15, 16, 20 home runs by June 5th. And that the package and the demand for him is higher than any of us could have imagined. And that when the trade is made, you say, you know what? We got to see some of it. Because to be honest with you, Spiegs, Grody, it doesn't matter if he's a 330, 40 homer, 100 RBI player for a full season with the White Sox now. It's actually just more frustrating. So give it to us in a small sample size and get him out of here for as most as you can get at the deadline. Because if he's that guy, he will be the Garrett Crochet name at the deadline this year. The problem is the history, the back of the baseball card, shows us he's not that guy. The talent does, the back of the baseball card doesn't. So you're just kind of crossing your fingers and hoping, let's see it all fly one last time.
Hey, Mark Grody, isn't it fun to talk to Ryan McGuffey?
I love talking to Ryan McGuffey.
Love this guy. Guff, we got to roll, dude. You're the best. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Hey, we got a topic coming up at the top of the 4 o'clock hour. I might text you about it. Guff would be a good guy to ask about
our
topic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right, yeah, we're going to send you something. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate you.
Hi, boys. All right, have a good day.
See you, man.
That's Ryan McGuffey right here on The Score. When we come back, the most entertaining person in basketball media talked about the difficult conundrum of coaches today. Mm. Let's hear that, and please stick around for our topic at the top of the hour. Dave Wanstead later on as well, and we'll continue to weigh in on occasion about the Score news of the day as well. It is Spiegs and Grody on The Score.
We're back live from Real Time Sports in Elk Grove Village with more of the Spiegel and Home Show presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Man, it is Matt Spiegel and Mark Grody here with you at 670 The Score. We're at Real Time Sports in Elk Grove Village. A note on the news of the day. Dan Bernstein is no longer with 670 The Score. We realize this is the biggest news for Score listeners, who are a faithful bunch. Appreciate that. We both appreciate that. We addressed it at 2 o'clock when we came on the air. If you'd like to use the rewind function on the Odyssey app, you can do that. If you don't have a rewind function or don't have the app for whatever reason, make a note. We're going to bring that to you in the 5 o'clock hour. We're going to talk to Dave Wanstead at 5 o'clock, and just after that, we're going to play that for you again because it was a long, very real, in-depth conversation about our former colleague.
And as...
Just a crazy, weird thing to say.
Yeah, it doesn't sit right with me. I mean, like I said, I literally, when I heard, I felt sick to my stomach when I heard about it. And as usual, as Dan has been able to elicit his entire career, this news, and it is news, is eliciting every possible emotion, just like why Dan Bernstein is one of the greatest Chicago sports talk show hosts, sports or otherwise. Like, he's up there, right? Like, if you put together your top 10, I'm talking about everybody. I mean, that's not an easy list to crack either. I mean, if we just want to keep it at sports, probably top 5.
Oh, I think,
right? Easily. Top 3.
For sure, top 5.
But he is eliciting every emotion, as you can imagine.
Maybe top 3, probably top 3.
Yeah, I would think that he probably would.
Yeah, look, I don't want to give the rest of the list cuz I don't want to leave off.
Oh no, I'm not trying to do that. That was not what I was trying to do.
I was about to start naming names.
Okay, I mean, we know who you're right though. We would probably leave somebody off.
Hey,
so Mark, why did you brainstorm that list of top score hosts with me before the show? You said, "Do you think this is going to be okay? Should I put this out today or should I wait a little while?"
I actually said, "Can we do this as a categories thing maybe? Can we just start playing the music?"
I'm tempted, Shane, to like name somebody as a joke that would be not be in the list, but then that would be just as rude and awful to say.
What was that guy who did the bad the wish list thing?
David Stein?
Wisniewski or Wisniewski?
Oh man.
Wait, don't be dogging on Dave Wisniewski, man.
I didn't like that guy.
He's good. Wisniewski.
And don't be dogging on David Stein, who wanted you to tell him something good in your life.
David Stein.
Remember David Stein?
Oh, I do remember David Stein.
He wasn't score, though. He was...
No, he was the score.
He was Sporting News Radio.
Right. But he was carried on the score from like 2 a.m. to 6 a.m.
Right.
Trying to kumbaya it on a daily basis.
Right, exactly.
Pharrell on the bench.
So, yeah. Anyway.
I'm going to be the man when you're the man. How is that possible? How you like my beer draft imitation? How was that?
It was pretty good. Pretty good back there. All
did a good Pharrell.
For the win. I thought Shane and I actually did that pretty well.
Yeah, I'll
tell you why. You just hit a home run.
Hey, everybody, what's going on for around the bench?
Because it's a lot like,
I like them French fried potatoes.
It's Sling Blade.
He likes the way I talk. You like the way I talk.
Exactly.
You're very good, man. Thank you very good.
Mark, very kind.
Is
that why I'm in your top 3?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Wow.
But 525. Put a pin in that.
That's the way we talk. You like the way I talk.
I like the way you talk.
Bears.
It's an odd day. Charles Barkley was talking about these kids today. And he had a little get off my lawn, but did he make sense as well? This is Chuckles on trying to coach kids like the ones playing in this NCAA tournament.
Listen, man, you cannot. That's one thing I love about Bruce Pearl. He doesn't play around. Mm-hmm. If you don't play, he's going to coach you. Like when he was recruiting players, he said, I'm going to do two things. You're going to graduate, and I'm going to coach you hard.
Yeah.
I think some of these coaches are so afraid to be an actual coach. You know,
what do you mean by that? So for the layman, Chuck, I know what you mean.
Everybody think when you criticize somebody, like when you coach them, it's criticism.
Yeah.
Like, no, nah, man, you got to do it the right way because most of the time you don't have more talent than players you're playing against. But coaching is part of coaching's criticism, discipline, and things like that. Yep. And a lot of coaches are so afraid because these kids are so sensitive now.
Man, you know, I understand what Charles is saying. But it's a tale as old as time that the aging analyst will talk about how sensitive the kids are and how the coaching has changed. But the truth is that the world has changed. And the truth is that the business, and yes, it is a business now, and it always was, but the kids were taken advantage of. The business has changed. These kids can bounce from program to program. These kids have power now.
Mm-hmm.
You have to coach them differently because they have agency. Now, for years we've talked about, well, maybe kids need to be talked to a different way because they're stronger now. Well, now financially and in terms of a business and the way that your program functions, they are stronger. And you have to show them more adult respect now, Charles.
It's been pretty amazing to think about what Bruce Pearl, from whom we just heard, what he has pulled off. And I know that we're, like, Grobber is probably going to zap me and destroy me for saying this, but Bruce Pearl's a bit of a badass. Like everybody, like around here, people don't like him.
That's
because
hilarious.
Because of Deion Thomas when he was at Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and the big fight with U of I, so I get it.
Wasn't it Iowa and U of I? Was he at Iowa at the time?
I believe it was Iowa. I think you are correct about that. But then this guy goes on to Tennessee and now Auburn, and now he's one of the elder statesmen and a bit of a badass, I have to admit.
Yeah, I think it's probably true that he is that now. And he's found a way to navigate it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's kind of weaselly. Can you be a weaselly badass? Can you be a weasel and a badass at the same time?
Probably, but how many college coaches, like the classics, like guys like Rick Pitino, John Calipari, they all have a little weasel in them, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Like the best ones. Pat Kennedy, the last time DePaul was successful.
Can you believe that I just did a couple of seconds of radio calling somebody both a weasel and a badass?
That
had nothing to do with Dan Bernstein in the news of the day.
That's how you do it. That's how you do it.
Nothing to do with the news of the day.
That's great.
That's great.
That's real good. That's just great.
You know, it is what it is.
Yes. Groats,
I appreciate you. We've got a topic for you. I have a topic for you, and that is something that we need the wisest, smartest Chicago sports fans involved in. It's time to name the all-dog team. We must assemble the all-dog team. We will explain when we come back on 670 The Score.